Hi, I'm John Green. Welcome to Crash Course Religion. So I'm a big Dungeons & Dragons fan and also a Christian. So naturally, I occasionally wonder, if Jesus played Dungeons & Dragons, what class do you think he'd pick? He was pretty big on turning the other cheek, so monk is in the mix. But he also advocated for the last to be first and the rich to be, well, let's just say a Robin Hood-esque rogue might be his thing too. But if I had to guess, he'd probably go with cleric. Clerics get their authority from the charisma stat, and Jesus had basically maxed that one out. Though you could make the argument that he'd maxed out all of his stats, what with purportedly being God and everything. But was it Jesus's charisma that made him such an effective leader? And what about other religious leaders? What gives anyone the right to tell you how you should or shouldn't live your life or practice your faith? So what is charisma exactly? Well, in the absence of a Dungeon Master's Guide, most scholars use sociologist Max Weber's definition of charisma. He called it a certain quality of an individual personality by virtue of which he is set apart from ordinary men. Consider modern examples of charismatic leaders, like TikTok's Christian influencers. They're compelling speakers, they understand how to engage young audiences, and their videos are getting billions of views. But you won't find sermons on their feeds, or the fire and brimstone I remember from televangelists. Instead, they're using viral dances and trending memes to spread the word of God. So, what's happening there? Well, Weber also distinguished between varieties of charisma, referring to charisma of office, which, for example, just comes with being pope or president or whatever, and charisma of personality, which a pope may or may not have, but a TikTok influencer absolutely needs. Take it from me, a middle-aged TikTok influencer, the saddest phrase in the English language. So you can either get your charisma from pre-existing tradition or authority, like popes and presidents, or from a personal, like, vibe. Now, of course, it's easier to become a pope or a president if you already have lots of charisma of personality, but it's not a prerequisite for the job. Like, you can just ask Richard Nixon. But of course, these TikTok stars are far from the first people without official recognition to speak with authority to and for a religious group. In fact, they're continuing a long tradition of visionaries and prophets and shamans who work outside recognized religious power structures. But charismatic leaders, of course, have often appealed to a higher authority in order to make up for their lack of official endorsements. Some have claimed supernatural powers, the ability to speak directly to God, or even that they themselves were God. I mean, Jesus certainly embodied Weber's belief that someone with enough charisma could be seen as apart from other men. He addressed massive gatherings without ever being granted official authority from religious leaders. He was, dare I say, chaotic good. And he wasn't the only one. From Muhammad to the Buddha to Guru Nanak, many religions owe much of their popularity today to early charismatic leaders. And because of this, the boundary between an institutional religious leader and a charismatic unofficial one is often kind of blurry. Let's go to the thought bubble. She's known by many names, the bony lady, the white sister, the godmother, but most call her simply Santa Muerte. Saint Death. Often represented as a female skeleton in a flowing robe gripping a scythe, Santa Muerte is what's called a folk saint, a figure that the Catholic Church doesn't officially recognize. In fact, the Church has condemned her as blasphemous, and yet she has millions of followers, many of them Catholics. Although this figure's been around for centuries, it wasn't until the early 2000s that she began gaining popularity, largely due to the charismatic leadership of the Vargas family, who founded the Temple of Santa Muerte International in Mexico City, erected the world's tallest statue of her, and preached passionately to a growing congregation. Now, despite the Catholic Church's disavowal, or perhaps in some ways because of it, veneration of Saint Death is one of the fastest growing religious movements across the Americas. Tomas Prower, a practitioner who wrote a book on Santa Muerte, described her as a non-judgmental deity who provides comfort to those cast out by the church, and sometimes the law, like LGBTQ folks, undocumented immigrants, and sex workers. She's even been associated with drug traffickers who make appeals for the safe arrival of their shipments, though most of her followers are ordinary folks asking for ordinary things we all want, like health and prosperity. Thanks, Thought Bubble. So the members of the Vargas family who founded the temple could certainly be considered charismatic leaders, right? Because they certainly weren't given any official authority by the Catholic Church, But as the Temple of Santa Muerte International gained more and more followers, at some point, the congregation itself granted the family legitimacy. The power of the growing collective became its own form of authority. And this is often how we see religious leadership come into being. Power doesn't only emerge from above, it can also flow up from below. Because here's the thing about established hierarchies. None of them are naturally occurring. We humans create them. And we see again and again that when a new religious movement grows big and complex enough to require logistics, official power structures start to emerge from the ground up. But this ground-up story becomes less visible the longer a religion sticks around. Like many religions today have official leaders such as priests, rabbis, imams, or monks who get their legitimacy from what our friend Max Weber called legal rational authority. Essentially, these folks are official leaders because the rules say they are. They often undergo formal training to become the official representative of their religion, responsible for interpreting religious texts, guiding spiritual practices, and maintaining doctrine. The power shifts to operate in more of a top-down way. The Catholic Church is a great example of this, with each level of leadership passing down information and granting authority to the lower levels in what's essentially a priestly org chart that says who reports to whom and who reports directly to God. But the Catholic hierarchy didn't start out that way. It took big plays by political and religious leaders and centuries of infighting to become what it is today, complete with all the pointy hats and a Pope mobile. And of course, leadership isn't structured the same way in every religion. Like in Hinduism, there's no ultimate authority at the top the way the Pope presides over all Catholics. But there are plenty of social hierarchies, like the caste system. And within that system, the Brahmin, or priestly caste, ranks highest. They're generally in charge of leading important Hindu rituals and serve as knowledge keepers by reading and learning the Vedas. Now, there are several ways that official leaders are granted legitimacy within these religious power structures. In some practices, this authority is passed down like a baton handoff, with people who already have authority deciding who inherits it. Take the Gelug school of Tibetan Buddhism, whose top authority is the Dalai Lama. The next step down is the Panchen Lama, whose job, among other things, is to seek out and mentor the next Dalai Lama. But Tibet is under the control of the Chinese government, which is currently challenging this tradition. The Chinese government insists it alone has the right to decide the next Dalai Lama, and they've even written it into Chinese law. So religious and political authority are in conflict, as indeed they often are. Some religions also grant authority through special rituals and rites, often in the form of ordination ceremonies, where people who've undergone specific training and proven themselves to be particularly devout are bestowed with special titles. In many Buddhist traditions, for example, monks and nuns are ordained twice, once when they commit themselves to the faith, usually as young children, and again when they become adults. And after these transformations, there are often ritualized ways practitioners across religions maintain their status. One way is through self-discipline, with intense fasts or vows of silence, poverty, or chastity. And then there's the question of how religious authority is enforced from the outside, which throughout history has often occurred through violence. The sociologist Emil Durkheim proposed that violence could be made, quote, sacred by religious authorities. For example, during the Middle Ages, an office within the Catholic Church called the Inquisition was set up to sniff out and punish people practicing what they considered to be heresy or a deviation from church dogma. In reality, it led to the torture and execution of many tens of thousands of Jews and Muslims in the name of protecting a particular type of religious power. And unfortunately, this kind of religious history continues to be made around the world in a variety of contexts as different groups try to define and enforce what counts as the truth. But if the rise of religious TikTokers has taught us anything, it's that you don't have to have official authority to have influence. In fact, everyday practitioners have long played important roles in the evolution of their religions. After all, they're the ones practicing what scholars call lived religion, or the ways people practice religion in daily life beyond institutional and doctrinal policy. People participate in religions in all kinds of unofficial ways, as we saw with the Catholic practitioners who venerate Santa Muerte. Swerving away from that norm in your private life can make a religion feel more real to some people, and over time, enough diversity in a religion can lead to major changes that work their way up from the masses rather than down from the leaders. And this type of divergence can sometimes create new openings in a religion for a wider variety of folks to walk through. For the last 3 decades, for instance, a group of Jewish women calling themselves Women of the Wall have pushed for their right to pray at the Western Wall in Jerusalem using a Torah scroll, a right traditionally reserved for men within Orthodox Judaism. They face significant backlash among Orthodox leadership, but the Women of the Wall argue that they have the right, by law, to be there. So who has the authority? We'll have to wait and see how it plays out. Lived religion can take place in secular spaces too, like Buddhist meditation was originally practiced overwhelmingly by ordained monks and nuns until it took off as a practice for lay people in the last 100 years. And even more recently, it's been studied and verified by research psychology as having mental health benefits, which subtly shifts the authority structure from one of religion to one of science. So now, something that was deeply embedded in a religious context is practiced at Silicon Valley workplace retreats, for better or worse. To paraphrase religious scholar Bruce Lincoln, when we focus only on officially sanctioned religious authority, we risk mistaking the ideological positions favored and propagated by the dominant fraction for those of the group as a whole. Religious leaders often explicitly try to lock down their way of doing religion, but lived religion continues to pop up and complicate things. Everyday practitioners are collectively constructing religion each day. If they quietly change a pattern or modify a design, it might go unnoticed for a while, but over time, the religion itself takes on a new texture. So where does power come from? Above or below? Well, to return to an old theme here on Crash Course Religions, it's complicated. Just like the concept of encumbrance in Dungeons & Dragons. Sorry, I wanted one more D&D joke in this episode. In our next episode, we'll explain in no uncertain terms what happens when you die. That's right, you come to Crash Course for answers, and we're gonna provide them. Just kidding, we're not. I'll see you then, though. Thanks for watching this episode of Crash Course Religions, which was filmed here in our studio in Indianapolis, Indiana, and made with the help of all of these nice people. If you want to help keep Crash Course free for everyone forever, you can join our community on Patreon.